Welcome to a Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Okay, let's unpack this. For you, the curious learner, today's deep dive is, well, pretty essential if you're interested in how literature tackles the mind. We're looking at Peter Handke's 1970 breakthrough, The Goalie's Anxiety at the Penalty Kick. It's quite a title, isn't it?
It really is. And Handke himself, you know, he's a major figure, Austrian avant-garde, won the Nobel in 2019. But this early novel, Goalie's Anxiety, it's something special. It's often called an anti-thriller.
Anti-thriller, meaning?
Well, it sort of takes the shape of a crime story. There's a crime, a character on the run, but Handke uses that framework for something completely different. It's really a deep, unsettling dive into like how consciousness works or maybe how it breaks down, how reality itself can feel unstable.
Right, because Handke was always pushing boundaries, wasn't he? A bit of a literary provocateur, challenging how stories are even told.
Absolutely. He famously disrupted a literary conference in the U.S. back in the 60s. He wasn't afraid to shake things up.
Okay, so our mission today, for you listening, is to figure out how Handke takes this specific anxiety, the goalie's moment of truth, and turns it into this huge metaphor for, well, modern existential dread. How does he pull that off?
It starts quite small, almost mundane.
Let's get into that starting point then. The protagonist is Joseph Block. He used to be a star goalkeeper, but now he works construction.
Yeah, an erector on a construction site. And the whole breakdown, the catalyst, it's incredibly ambiguous.
What happened?
He shows up for work one day and his foreman gives him a look. Just a look. And Block interprets this look as meaning he's fired.
Just interprets it. We don't know if he actually was fired.
Exactly. It's uncertain. But for Block, his reading of that look is absolute. It snaps something. That connection to his ordinary, structured life is severed in his mind instantly. And that's the trigger for his complete psychological detachment.
Wow. So one ambiguous moment sends him spiraling.
Pretty much. And what follows is this aimless wandering through Vienna. But aimless doesn't quite capture the mental state. He becomes hyper-observant. He starts scrutinizing everything, the tiniest details, shop window displays, street signs, the patterns on things, textures. It's like he believes the whole world is sending him coded messages, that there's some hidden meaning he has to decipher.
Almost like the world has become hostile, or at least deeply suspect.
Precisely. He's constantly trying to find patterns, make connections, but it's exhausting because the patterns aren't really there. It's his mind imposing this desperate search for order onto chaos.
And you can see the connection to his old identity, can't you? As a goalie, his job was to read signs, interpret movement, react instantly. Success or failure was immediate, clear.
Right. Very clear parameters. But everyday life, civilian life, it doesn't work like that. It's full of nuances, unspoken rules, social complexities.
So that intense focus, that need to interpret immediate physical cues, which served him well on the field.
But becomes a total liability in the real world. He can't navigate the ambiguity. He's adrift. Yeah. His old skill becomes his mental prison.
Okay, so he's detached, wandering, overinterpreting everything. Where does this lead him? This internal breakdown must eventually collide with the external world.
Well, it does, dramatically and violently. This leads us to the central crime of the novel.
Tell us about that.
He meets a woman, Gerda, who works as a cinema cashier. They spend the night together, and then he kills her.
And how is this presented? Is it passionate? Full of rage?
That's the chilling part. No. Handke narrates the murder with this incredibly cold, detached style. It's described almost like Block is tying his shoe or performing some other routine action. There's no motive given, no passion, no emotional weight assigned to it.
So it's just another event in his breakdown.
Exactly. It's presented as a symptom, almost a logical consequence of his complete inability to connect, to understand moral weight or emotional significance. Like you said earlier, it's not the dramatic climax you'd expect in a thriller.
It's the ultimate expression of his alienation then. The inability to even register the significance of taking a life.
Precisely. He can't distinguish between the trivial and the profound anymore.
And his escape. Is he panicked? Does he try to cover his tracks?
No. Again, it's strangely passive. He feels no guilt, apparently. He just gets on a bus and travels to this small, sort of nondescript border town.
A border town. Interesting choice.
Yeah, it feels deliberate. It's a liminal space, right? A place between places. It perfectly mirrors his own mental state stuck on the borderline between sanity and, well, whatever state he's in.
And does being there help him? Or does the paranoia worsen?
It gets much, much worse. In this border town, his paranoia just accelerates dramatically. He starts seeing coded messages everywhere.
Like what?
Newspaper headlines, snippets of conversations he overhears, even random objects, like an apple sitting on a table might seem to him like a direct reference to his crime.
Everything becomes part of this personal, threatening code only he can see.
Yes. The novel notes something like he had forgotten how to distinguish between what was important and what was not. That failure to filter, to assign appropriate weight to things, is the core of his terror. He's drowning in meaningless signs that his mind insists are meaningful.
Okay, this feels like a good point to pivot to the bigger picture, the themes. How does Hanghee use Blanche's terrifying state to say something broader about meaning or the lack of it in modern life?
Well, there are a couple of key pillars here, I think. First, there's a profound critique of language and communication.
How so?
In the novel, language just seems to fail everyone. Characters talk past each other, they use cliches, empty phrases. Words don't seem to connect to genuine meaning anymore. They become these arbitrary signs that just add to the confusion. Communication breaks down.
Like language itself is part of the problem, part of the noise Block can't filter.
Exactly. And the second pillar is the unreliability of perception. Because we experience the story through Blanche's fractured perspective, Hanke forces us, the readers, to question objective reality itself.
We're trapped in his head, seeing the world as he does.
Right. And Hanke uses these brilliant, paradoxical descriptions to capture that. There's a line that really sticks with me. The silence in the room was so complete that it seemed like noise.
Wow. That captures it perfectly. Sensory overload, even in emptiness. The internal noise overwhelming the external silence.
Yeah, it shows how distorted his perception has become.
And all this builds towards the climax, which isn't really a plot climax, but more of a philosophical one. The penalty kick scene itself.
Yes, the moment that gives the book its title, it's crucial. Block is watching a local soccer game, and he starts explaining the goalie's dilemma to a man sitting nearby.
What's his theory?
He argues that the goalie's fundamental mistake, the source of his anxiety, is trying to guess what the kicker will do. Trying to anticipate the shot, diving too early based on assumption.
Okay, so what's the solution, according to Blanche?
His insight, his sort of terrifying solution, is that the goalie shouldn't guess. The best strategy is to just stand perfectly still, do nothing, force the kicker to react to the goalie's absolute passivity.
Stand still. Wow. Uh-huh. That's quite a conclusion.
It is. And it's the central metaphor, isn't it?
It has to be. The penalty kick becomes existence itself.
Oh.
The pressure to act, to choose, to interpret, when everything feels uncertain and overwhelming.
Exactly. It's the anxiety of having to make a move in a world you can't reliably read. And Block his answer. Paralysis. Opt out. Withdraw from the game entirely. Stand still.
Which signifies his complete detachment from active life, from making choices, from moral engagement.
It's his final withdrawal. A terrifying kind of peace, maybe, but achieved by renouncing participation.
Let's talk about how Hanke makes us feel this so intensely. The literary style is key, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The style is the experience in many ways. Critics often call it a behaviorist perspective or maybe third person limited.
What does that mean in practice? How does it read?
It means the prose is very sparse, very direct, clinical almost. The narrator just reports what Block does, what he sees, his external actions and perceptions. We rarely, if ever, get access to his internal thoughts, his feelings, his motivations.
So we see him kill Gerda, but we're not told why or what he feels about it.
Precisely. We just see the action. We, the readers, are put in the same position as Block himself, constantly observing external data, fragments, and trying desperately to piece together some meaning or intention, but without the usual internal guideposts literature provides.
That forces us into his state of anxious interpretation.
Yes. And it's achieved through this relentless focus on mundane details, the way light hits a surface, the specific objects in a room. Hanke makes the ordinary seem utterly strange, alien, even threatening, just by describing it so intensely and without emotional context. That's where that lasting sense of unease comes from.
So Hanke really wasn't just telling a story about a breakdown. He was using that breakdown to explore something fundamental about how we perceive reality, how language works or fails, how society functions or doesn't.
Yeah, he took psychological collapse and turned it into this profound meditation on, you know, the modern human condition, especially under the pressures of contemporary life, information overload, the breakdown of shared meaning. It was incredibly influential.
It stripped away all the usual comforts of narrative, clear motives, emotional arcs, satisfying resolutions.
And in doing so, it showed that alienation isn't just a personal feeling. It can be a result of the systems themselves, language, social codes, perception failing us.
So reflecting on it now, the novel's enduring power seems to be that it doesn't offer easy answers or catharsis. It's more like a mirror, isn't it? A really unsettling one.
Definitely a chilling mirror. It forces us to think about how fragile our own grasp on shared reality, on language, might actually be.
And that final thought from Block about standing still. It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? If paralysis is his solution to the anxiety of constant interpretation and action, what things in our own lives, maybe the endless news cycle or social media or even dating apps, are we frantically diving into, trying to anticipate or react, when maybe the better strategy would be to just stand still for a moment?
That's a really pertinent question to leave listeners with. What are we reacting to prematurely instead of observing?
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.